Well, there's nothing that gets an athlete more fired up than somebody firing them up. And when it's your previous coach in life, it gets you a little more fired up. So if you weren't fired up from the last two sessions, I'm fired up for you enough that I got you covered, all right? But you need to have it in you to get a little pumped up about what you're doing, all right? Because Kenny just talked to us about that. And I'd love to sit here and tell you that Kenny was talking to you, not talking to me. But Kenny's talking to me when he talks about mediocrity, right? I'm 42, and I sit there in that seat needing to hear every bit of that, maybe more than you need to hear it. So when it comes to being real, I'm not afraid to be real, and sometimes it's humiliating if I'm going to be real. If I'm going to be truthful, I'm going to be honest, it don't always look like Christ, but I'm trying, right? I'm going to try. But I get fired up. I mean, I really do. Like, I'm sitting in my seat back there. I'm like, I'm missing a leg now. I can't quite do what I used to do for Kenny when I had two legs. But I'd go out there right now and try to dunk on somebody's head. It would look a little embarrassing, and I wouldn't quite get to the backboard. But I was pumped and excited to just say, man, I hope these guys are sitting here. You're the spot in life where you don't have to have some of the dents and dings and creases that I got to try to smooth out because of mistakes I've made. Because you're at a spot now where hopefully it's pretty fresh. It may be a little beat up or banged up, but it shouldn't be too terribly bad. But if it is, we're talking about Jesus. And he deals with us differently than humans deal with us. And if it is bumpy, and if it is nasty, and if in your private world, those things of pornography and other things that Kenny's talked about are pretty rampant in your life, I'm going to tell you, Jesus will deal with you differently than I might. I might be embarrassed for you or whatever. You may get ill treatment from your parents. You may lose privileges of technology because there's a wise choice being made or whatever. But Jesus will forgive you, okay? Jesus will forgive you. And he will forgive you in a way that humans will not forgive, okay? I've got an older brother. I've got an older and a younger brother. My older brother, John's 6'4" and about, well, it used to be 240 pounds. I think it's a little different number now, but it's not gone down. It may have gone up. But he's still a big dude, and he was a big dude in my life. And one time he picked me up by my jawbone and threw me across the room because he wasn't very happy with me. And those are things that he could do, and he still can do. He can still pick me up and throw me across the room. If I make him mad enough, he just might do it. That's the fear of him. I'm still scared of that guy. But one particular time, we used to always slug each other in the shoulders and stuff. We were brothers, and that's what we would do. And I'd nailed him one time. That's not a very good thing to do. You don't want to punch somebody that you're scared of, you know. But I had slugged him, and he didn't do anything. He didn't hit me. I was just like, hey, I think I'm getting a little bit bigger. You know, my brother is getting, he's getting where he's kind of like, he's giving me a little space. He's respecting who I am. About A week later, I'm walking down the hallway at my house. He's walking down the hallway of our house. But I'll tell you, when I went to punch him, I didn't give you all the details, he had on a brand new pair of shorts that day that I had hit him. And he went to kind of react, and when he did, his hand ripped his brand new shorts. He ripped a pocket out of them. And that's when I thought he was going to kill me. You know, I really thought it was the last day of my life. I'm like, I just caused my brother. My mom and dad aren't home right now, and I just made him tear up his brand new shorts, you know. A week later, I'm walking down the hallway, and he comes out of nowhere, and he punches me. I broke my left shoulder playing football in the eighth grade, and my bone rotated forward, and he knew that. So my bone is out here. You can bruise really easy. Bone is right there. There's not much muscle pad. And he hit me right on that bone and drove me back against the wall in the hallway. And I was like, what in the world was that for? He was like, yeah, it was for last week. That's his forgiveness. You know, he couldn't even let it go. He tried to let it go. He must have went back in his room that morning and picked those shorts up and thought, all right, this is it. I'm going to get him today. You know, that's sometimes reality of how we forgive. We're scared to death to go be transparent to our mom and dad because they're not going to forgive us. We're scared to death to sit down with somebody from our church and say, look, Kenny, you asked me to be real. I'm going to be real with you. And I'm going to tell you some real nasty stuff in my life. And we're so afraid that when we do that, the response of that person is going to be nasty in return. And so what I want to talk to you about is this idea that friends forgive. And I'm not talking about superficial, let's just hit a couple verses that the Lord talks about forgiveness and we need to be forgiving people. We got to get serious about forgiving people. And you're going to have to be somewhat of a sponge to absorb some of their nasty and sit on it. Keep your mouth shut. They're not coming to you to go tell the rest of the church their struggle. They're coming to you because for the last 6 months, they've silently sat on their sin. And they finally decided, I'm going to get the courage to go share with somebody and maybe together I can beat back Satan and his effort in my life. And if they tell you, sit on it with them. Help them understand what God has done, what God is willing to do in this forgiving effort. So many people just cannot forgive in today's world, and we can't deal with dirt. You know, it's just if we're not faking it, as Kenny's talking about, and we're doing it for real, we act like if someone gets outside of real and mingles with Satan a little bit and gets a little beat up, they're just not a good Christian. You know, they're just a horrible person. And then they sense that. They see you over there talking about them. They saw you whispering over there about so-and-so. And they kind of walk out and say, you know what? Forget these people. They're not real about me either. They can't absorb my nasty and help me through life. I'm going to tell you right now, if people can't forgive, it's a problem. I mean, I played for Kenny. If he didn't forgive me for some of my mouth and my attitude, I wouldn't have played anymore for him. You know, he forgave me sometimes. You know, he set me down one game. I wouldn't shut my mouth. Well, I was so mad, I wanted to win so bad, and these guys were, there were hands, we couldn't throw the ball 1 foot without them stealing it and dunking at the other end of the court. I'm a competitor. I am going to figure out a way to win. And I was irritated at what we were doing, and I was letting him know. And he said, you can sit down. And I sat down for a few minutes that game. But he forgave me, and he got me back in there. Didn't help. I think we still lost to those guys, but we tried, you know. So he had a bad ride home. But if you don't forgive in life, in just little moments like that, a coach blows up, gets mad at his player, and sets him down out of anger and can't go, you know what? He flared up, let's get back to action, let's shake this thing out, let's go. If in a home, if a husband and wife can't say, you know what? Flared up. My bad. Jonathan talks about his temper. I'm assuming there's some times, like me, he has to say to his wife, I'm sorry that the tone went where it went. I shouldn't talk like that. It's a flare up. Let's get going, okay? Some people just can't do that. They can't just get back to fresh. And so the title I've given you is a principle that was laid down in my home by my father with me and my brothers in a way that is just unbelievable to me that it carries over in my life in a positive way. And it's this concept of striking hands for the well-being of others. That's a principle that was taught in my home by way of teaching forgiveness. An attitude change towards the other party now. It was demanded. My father is an authoritative leader of his home. He is a Black Beret military man. He is an army man. He's just a lot of man. He just works with his hands. He just thinks you should take care of yourself. He laid down principles for us such as this. Every man should pack his own lunch. That started for me at like age 5. We're going to cut firewood, son. We're going to be gone all day. We're leaving the house. Your mom's not going. I am going to pack this lunch bag over here with this sandwich and some potato chips. You're going to get hungry too. You might want to do the same thing. He didn't pack my little lunch and roll it up for me and say, I got you covered. He made us go get the stuff out of the fridge and pack it. That's what he taught us to do. Pack your own lunch. Every man's got to pack it. That's a whole nother sermon that I preach sometimes. You got to pack your lunch. Kenny's asking you to pack your lunch, meaning carry your load in life. Don't ask me to carry it for you. I got enough to carry of my own. I'm trying. Satan's beating me back too. I need to go forward. He's pushing on me. I don't need you pulling me backwards. You need to pick your stuff up and let's go. Okay? But in that same home, this concept, when you got 3 boys in a house and you got competitive nature, there's going to be some problems, right? It's just going to happen. You guys got brothers, don't you? Got anybody in here that's got a brother? Right? Yeah? Okay. Sisters, I don't know what you guys do, if you pull each other's hair or what you do is slap each other. But I didn't have any girls in my house. I got them now, and I'm kind of learning what they do. But my father, this was the deal. If there's an infraction, something's going on,
we're in the backyard and I just got fouled by him and I'm telling him it's my ball, you fouled me, and he's saying, no, it's not, you're playing like a girl or whatever, which now we know girls can play like boys, and that's a statement that we don't say anymore, but we used to say it and it's wrong, but that's what we said, all right? And so he would see that happening and he would just yell out the window. We knew what it meant. He would say, hey, strike hands for the well-being of others. And we knew what that meant. He'd already told us. He'd set us down before and explained it to us. It meant that we're going to, let me strike your hand right here. We're going to do that right there. And he would tell us when he had laid this principle down for us, you're going to make physical contact somehow to make you realize, all right, this is going to have to stop. What we've done is going to stop and it's over. Well, you can imagine what two brothers who are already at a quarrel over, you know, it's 9-8 right now, playing to 10. I need the ball. You know, this is a big deal, you know. And when we would strike hands, it was like this. You know, he's watching, but dude, I'll break your neck. He's not back at, you know. And it was rough. You know, we're trying to, you know, I'm going to do it because he said do it, but I want to strike your face, dude, or something. That's what we'd be saying, you know. But it would, and sometimes, and as soon as we'd hit like that, somebody might chuckle or somebody would laugh, and it would be like, all right, it's 9-8, bro. It's your ball, but I will get it, but you will not score. I'll beat you 10-9, whatever's going to, you know, it's going to happen. So in step number two in the process, so if dad comes back by, same infractions on the table, he would say, all right, boys, step number two. And we knew what that meant. Step two in the process was, if you hadn't solved it by now, you had to front hug your brother, okay? Now, I know your society's gotten a little soft, and there's some little gamers in life, and they don't mind maybe hugging each other like they, in our day and time, you just didn't hug your brother face to face. Just you didn't do that, you know? And that's maybe unhealthy, but we were, you know? And so then we try to break each other's back, you know, like, you know, squeezing, mumbling all kinds of stuff to each other. But the idea was, okay, if that's not enough, we're going to go to step number two, you know. And step number three was you're going to kiss your brother on his lips. All right? So how many times do you think in our home we held on to grudges past step number two? Zero. Okay? Absolutely zero. And that was just something that was in my home. I didn't realize at the time how valuable it was. I just realized it was a house rule. You know, I had to get through that. It taught me over and over again that we can stop right now with this situation and just reset. And I can forgive you. Sorry, your ball. Or here, this is yours. Take it. You know, my bad. And it helps me to, I'll call home to this day and be like, Dad, I'm dealing with somebody right now in my life who obviously never has had to do anything remotely close to striking hands for the well-being of others. Do you hear the statement? Strike hands for what purpose? For the well-being of who? Others, too. It's healthy for them, and it's healthy for you to forgive. I'm sitting there listening to Kenny, and I'm being real serious when I say he's talking to me right now, and some bumps and bangs in my own life. And I wrote in my notes in my phone, just so you know how serious it is, the words to the song when we sang, "It Is Well With My Soul." And there's this line that we sang. I'll go back over here if I can get back to it. My sin, not in part, but the whole, is nailed to the cross, and I bear it no more. And I'm sitting there and thinking, really, I'm struggling right now with, why am I still bearing some guilt of things I've got? You know, I've got some guilt that I'm bearing. The song says, I bear it no more. I've nailed it to the cross. Then why do I sit there and being challenged by someone to not to be mediocrity in my Christianity? Am I so guilt-stricken? Because I'm carrying that, and it's not healthy. And I wrote that in my phone so that I'll remember it's been nailed to the cross. Jesus has done way more than strike hands for the well-being of others. He's nailed it to the cross and remembered it no more. That's what Jesus has done. That's where Jesus can help you. In a way that maybe even I can, as much as I had good upbringing and had some good house rules about striking hands for the well-being of others, I'm going to tell you right now, Jesus can bear it for you. And it's not that he has to, he has bore it. It has been shed from his body. I have lost a limb in my life above the knee. I'm missing my right leg above my knee through a traumatic construction accident. I have physically bled to the point of death. I have dehydrated myself entirely. I've received 46 units of blood in a given day. I am not saying I know what it's like to be put upon a cross, but I do know very closely what it's like to bleed to the point of death and be rejuvenated. I've experienced that. It's lonely and it's scary. It's painful. I was doing it to survive. I was doing it to live away from. I didn't want to go in that direction. I was fighting out of it. He willingly chose to go through that to the point of death so that you don't have to bear that guilt. Then why in the world would you transfer that guilt to someone else who comes to you and says, I want your forgiveness. I have failed in X, Y, Z. And I need you to forgive me. Well, you're an idiot. I knew you've been doing that all. Did you hear me? Did you hear what I came here to do? I came here to ask you for your forgiveness. I want our friendship to get back to what it was. I want our father-son relationship. I want our mother-daughter relationship to be like it was last week or last year. You know, maybe it's been a year, you know. There are things that I've been battling through in my life and making things good in my home that have been really painful for 13 months, trying to get things better at home. It's getting there, right? Sometimes it's been a long time. You know what we want in our home? You know what you should want in your life is, let's get back to where we were. Let's get back to where we were. Maybe let's get better than where we were. Maybe let's get better than where we were. And I'm just here to tell you, if you're going to be a Christian, and you're going to do what Kenny's asking you to do, and you're going to learn from these examples that Jonathan has laid down, and you're going to take this serious, you're going to have to understand Satan is real. Sin will happen. It will come into your life. You will have to deal with it, and you will deal with others who fail at the same effort. Satan's at them too. And some point in time, like I've done recently, is I've kind of slapped the door jamb in my house and said, Satan is not going to win in this house anymore. Or whatever it may be that you're up against. You're going to have to decide to give that same forgiveness to your friends. You have in the Bible all kinds of examples of this. And you think of Paul and Peter as one example. In the book of Galatians, there's a situation where it looks like Peter has kind of caved to the local situation. He's eating with them and he's doing some, you know, he's not doing really what he should be doing in the situation. And Paul witnesses what Peter's done. Paul's a faithful friend. He's not a softy. He's not going to turn around and go, man, did you see Peter over there? He's such a piece of work. He's such a joke. No, he goes over. And in Galatians, it says Paul withstood him to his face. He got like this and said, yo, Joshua, what you're doing ain't right, bro. And we're going to have to cut it out. We got some work to do for the Lord. And, you know, that's what he did. He didn't go run and tell 50 people. Did you see what Joshua's doing over there? He came to his face because he cares about him. And he stood to his face personally, one-to-one. He didn't Snapchat, Insta, post, Facebook, whatever you guys tweet. I don't know what all you do. I know some of them are dying out. My life is Facebook's dying. I understand that. But you guys, maybe you still have a Facebook app on your phone. I don't know. We do. That's what we thought was really cool, you know. That's not the use of those tools. It's time to put that stuff down. You know, if you listen to me ever, like, turn that stupid stuff off and go shake somebody's hand. You know, tell these guys all the time, why don't you walk over to that girl with your hand out and shake her hand with a pencil and paper and ask her for some information? You'll blow her away. She's never had anyone do that. You can quit Instagram stalking her for 3 weeks like a pansy and go talk to her, you know? I mean, that's just where we come from. Paul's that kind of man. He says, look, I'm not going to go talk about Peter. He's my brother. And he goes to him and he stands to him face to face. You know what I love about that situation is what you hear in 2 Peter chapter 3 and verse 15. So now you're Peter, right? You've had someone come to you and kind of slap you around a little bit. This ain't going to work. Later, Peter talks about Paul as his beloved brother, Paul. He's commending Paul. Sounds like to me there was some sort of striking hands for the well-being. You know, we're here for the cause of Christ. I'm not going to get mad at Paul because he jumped at me for doing things I shouldn't do. I'm going to get mad at Satan, and I'm going to go work for the Lord right now. Your friends, when they come to you and they've got sin, they've got infractions against you, they need your love. They need your compassion. I've got a brother, physical brother, in life, my younger brother, who is going through horrible, horrible life right now with his home. And it's sad. And it's going to end with him and his wife not probably in the same home. He called me in tears 10 days ago. He said, Scott, I need somebody to love me, not tell me all the things wrong with my situation. We've tried. But right now, I need somebody who just wants to love me and root for me. That's what I need. He said, even close connections are beating me down. They're not rooting for me. I need somebody to root for me. So I that's what I try to be for him. That's real. That's present. He doesn't need you now. He doesn't need the counselor that Kenny's talking about now. It seems like it's beyond that point. He needs encouragement to push through what's ahead of him now. That's real. That's a Christian who married a Christian and is ending in a situation that's very unfortunate. You know what those people need? You know what he needs? You know what his wife needs? Somebody to love him and root for him. Strike hands with him and pick him up. Even if it's going to be in separate homes, we're going to go love the Lord. That's what they need. Who are we? You know, are we going to, we're going to write those people off? Oh, that's a divorced person. That's a child of God who's been through some unfortunate things. They need some striking hands for the well-being of others to go on in their life. That's what people need. You may be in situations where you have not extended that to someone. And I'm just going to tell you, you need to be willing to offer those things. I think about friendship and love and kindness and peace and gentleness and tenderheartedness and all these things. And then I think about the enemy sometimes. And the enemy is deceptive. I'm talking about Satan. And I think about an illustration in my personal life one time where the enemy and I had to face each other in a sporting event that this gives me illustration of the spiritual world. We played against a team all the time, Seymour, up the road from us in Indiana. My hometown is Madison, Indiana. And this kid named Matt Lowe played for Seymour. By the time I was a senior, I think this is about the size he was when he was a freshman, but as a senior, he was 6'6", 332 pounds. He played middle linebacker on the football field. I played quarterback, so I was all the time having to get down under center and look across at some guy that could eat me for lunch and think, man, I hope he doesn't come through. You know, oh, I hope he doesn't come running through here. And he, as tall as he was, and he was big, so you kind of thought he's lethargic and slow, you know, whatever. I'm not too worried about him. I can outrun him probably. But he played real low. He always squatted down really low in his linebacker position. And it was like kind of annoying. I'm like, why is he doing that? Why is he so down low? So I was just like, forget it. We're going to run a post route and throw the ball right over his head. And we're going to show him, you squat down, we'll take advantage of you on this football field. And we're going to take advantage of his situation. He's playing up a little bit tighter and he's low enough. I think I can run my guy right behind him. So that's exactly what we did. Matt Lowe went on to play Big Ten football, and I don't know, he might end up in the NFL. He was not slow, and he was not lethargic. And I threw that ball over what I thought was going to go over his head. He came out of that squat position, and he just started standing up. Going, I threw the ball pretty high because I knew what his height was, and he came way off the grass, and he got really long, and he went up, and he just grabbed my ball, both of his hands like this. A little bit late in the play by now. Linemen have kind of done their thing. They're kind of spread out. My receivers have moved. Tailback has drifted out to pull them off the decoy. It's Matt Lowe and me. I'm right here. There's like green grass between me and him. And he has my ball. I'm not real happy about that. But I also wanted to just kind of run off the field and let him go score a touchdown because I didn't want to deal with what's coming next. And I was like, I got to go tackle that guy. And he's going to come straight at me because there's his end zone is down there. And he came straight at me, and I went straight at him. I think half my teammates did run off the field because, like, forget this. I'm not messing with this guy. And I hit him or tried to hit him, and he ran into me. And I wrapped my arms around him, and my head fell beside his thighs, and he took me about 22 yards down the field. I mean, I'm just hanging on. And my helmet's beating and banging off his thigh pad, and I'm literally thinking, where are my teammates? There's 11 of us out here. Are they just videoing this? We didn't have phones. Like, now they might have been videoing it. Like, ha, look at Sandusky, you know? I'm like, where are, about seven guys later, we slowed the guy down enough and got him to kind of fall to the ground, I guess. He'd been deceptive, right? The whole game he'd played down here at 5'4", down low, trying to act like he's reading things, just baiting me probably to just do that very thing. Sometimes the enemy is very deceptive. And man, when he wants to stand up, he will kick you in the teeth and drag you down the field of life in a way that you never thought you'd have to endure. And sometimes you do want to run off the field and hide. And sometimes you can't. I mean, he's just right there. And when that happens to you, or that happens to somebody else, I'm going to tell you, they need somebody to go out there and pick them up and lift them up. Let them know you can forgive them. Because if you continue to hold them there, as I talked to you about the guilt of things you have in your life and you're trying to clean up your life or get rid of something, if somebody keeps just reminding you of the same thing over and over and over again, at some point in time, you can't bear it anymore. You're like, I have tried myself to wash this out of my life. I don't need you to come bringing it at me in such a way that you're reminding me every day of my infractions. You can change your attitude. You could go home. You may have a bumpy relationship with your mother and father. You could go home today and sit down and say, you know what? I want this to change. If it's on you. If it's on them, you could ask them, I would like for this to change. I don't know what we can do to make these things change. But I think you have to understand in life, you're young. I think sometimes we're so afraid in the church to be real that, hey, you're gonna end up on your back and somebody's throat or foot's on your throat. And you just want to quit. You want to quit on the Lord. The things that I'm bumping through and trying to make my home better, there have been days and weeks and months where I have just kind of quit. Like, forget it. This relationship's bumpy. I'm just going to let things fly bumpy or whatever. And then I get fired up. I'm like, no, we are not. We will not lose to him. He's the enemy. And he's squatting down low. And he about kicked me in the teeth, but I ain't having it. And I don't think there's anything wrong with having some competitive nature when it comes to your soul. You don't have to be a sportsman. And sometimes I've been bad about it. That's all I know. You know, it's just grit and grind and athletic illustration. If you're not an athlete, you know, what are you doing with your life? You know, whatever. That's not true. There's a lot of things that your generation is doing that is non-sport related that I maybe not comprehend and need to have more understanding of. But whatever the illustration is in your life or whatever you can equate it to, you've got to understand Fortnite. Maybe that's what you need to hear. I don't know. You need some little funky dance you want to do in your game or whatever it is. You know, whatever, find your competitive side. If that's your world, I don't even know what it is. Matter of fact, I usually reference it as Fort Day because I know nothing about it, okay? It's time to get serious and competitive about the situation of your soul. I mean, that's just something you're going to have to be competitive. You might say, well, I'm not competitive at all. That's fine. And a lot of other things, that's just perfectly fine. But when it comes to your soul, as I'm watching, even in I'm a good Christian home I was raised in, and watching my brother's situation and listening to my situation and seeing my other brother, they've all had bumps and bangs in life that maybe we never thought would have been in the Sandusky book. But they're having to smash through and push through and go and mash and go and go. Satan is, what does the Lord say? He walketh about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. He's got arrows and darts of evil, wild schemes, and he's plotting them against you. Okay? The North Carolina camp, our theme was basically armor up. And we were sitting at the table one day, all the kids in the cafeteria, and they started beating and banging on the table, making some rhythmic beat that they do every year. I've been to this camp for 7 years. Every time we get done eating, they do the same pattern to tell the cafeteria staff, thank you. At 42, from 35 to 42, I still haven't figured out that stupid pattern. I don't know how they do whatever the beat is. You can't teach an old dog new tricks, okay? I haven't figured it out. But they were getting it one day. And I was like, uh-oh, you know, the rhythm was kind of going, and we had one kid kind of really getting them going, and it was just on. You guys know what a closet artist is? It's a rap artist who comes out of the closet in the middle of some weird situation, you know, and I was like, I'm over there just like trying to make this rhyme in my head, and I'm just doing it by myself quietly. And my buddy Elijah Tucker, he sees my mouth moving. He's like, I see you over there, come on. You know, I was like, no. But I literally went outside and grabbed my phone and wrote this rap about the Christian armor, you know, and just the stupidest thing ever, but it helps me remember those things, you know. If my rhyme don't cut when you hear it, then I'll cut you with the sword of the Spirit. You know, stuff like that, you know. In the Old Testament, we read about Ruth, but in the New, it's the belt of truth. You know, those are just some. I won't give you all my stuff because it's not copyrighted yet. I don't want you taking it. And I did this somewhere else. I said, some kid's probably making millions on YouTube, and I haven't even got this legally taken care of, you know. If you think my dub got devastation, won't you try the helmet of salvation? All right, there you go. You got three lines. From there, you can just take the rest and go. The idea is we're going to have to protect ourselves. But sometimes the armor, we put it down. And that's the concept I was trying to get the kids to understand at my opportunity to kind of wrap up the week was all the action words that go with the armor of God are something you got to do. You got to take this up. You got to shod your feet. You got to put on the belt. You got to bring over the breastplate of righteousness. Okay? You got to put on the helmet of salvation. There's nothing about it that says, because you walk with God, Iron Man will happen when you walk out of the house and he'll just, and you'll have it all. You got to take it up. And you know what happens sometimes? We lay some pieces down. Not on purpose, maybe not intentional, but you don't realize, and I really think there's seven. I love the statement there about prayer. When you look at Ephesians talking about the armor. I think we leave prayer out of the situation all the time, but that's another one. But my point is, if you don't bring it all with you every day, which is a conscious effort, so that's on you, that's on me. I got to take it. I got to bring it. I got to bring the armor with me. I got to put it on. I got to dig into this book and read what God has to say. I got to have it with me. Sometimes you let the shield down. And that's when we find ourselves in trouble. Or we don't have the breastplate of righteousness, okay? I think that one was, when it comes to my spitting, I don't care how you rate, but when it comes to righteousness, it's the breastplate, okay? So you understand the idea is, these are things you gotta have on. You gotta put these things on. When they're not on, be careful. And this is what I'm trying to get you to understand. Sometimes your fellow brother or sister in Christ let some of their armor down. They didn't do it on purpose. They didn't find themselves in a nasty situation because they wanted to belabor you with heavy things in life. That's not why they did that. They didn't say, if I could go out and fail tomorrow and crush my mom and dad and have them have sleepless nights for the next few months, that's what I want to do. That's not what they intended. And they don't need you to say, well, did you really think I could help you through the situation? How stupid could you have been? Why did you do what you did? They are where they are. They are in a bad situation. What they need is for you to go forgive them and love them and keep them in the fold of God's number. They do not need you to hate them and berate them and isolate them so that they just say, you know what? That place isn't safe. My brother will say to you right now, he doesn't feel safe in his church family right now. He feels attacked. He's having some hard times, and I'm trying to help him. Say, hey, man, I know it is your church, but okay, they have failed you. And so we don't need people to fail each other. We need to take care of us. And Kenny's, again, talking to me right here. I need to go get me good. When I'm good, then I'm valuable. Okay, so my father is a military man. I've told you that. And I talk about the feet really quick when we're talking about the armor. And I mean, he's huge on your feet. In the army, they tell you pack another pair of socks, take a pair, two pair of socks in a day. Even if we haven't trudged through water as a soldier, stop, take your boots off, inverse your socks, take them inside out, let them dry out, put them back in your bag, put new socks on so your feet are staying fresh and dry. That's your mobility. And he was just huge on your feet, your feet, your feet. You couldn't come out of the house there without your shoes on. You come outside for 2 seconds. Get your shoes. What are you doing out here? Go inside and get your shoes. I mean, it was just ingrained in him to take care of your feet. And I remember one time I was pushing. It took me a little while to learn how to ride a bike for some reason. I was slow at that. I don't know what happened. But I would push my bike and run beside it to keep up with my older brother because I wanted to be where he was. And I know I look like an idiot in the neighborhood, but that's okay. I would run all over the place. And one time they took off and I wasn't ready. I didn't have my shoes on, so I just took off with them. And those little clovers in your yard, you know, there's bees that get on those clover. And I had stepped on one of those and a bee lit me up 2 or 3 times right in the bottom of my foot. Well, I can just tell you, my dad wasn't very compassionate because I didn't have on what? I didn't have my shoes on. And I came home at the age of, I don't know, 21 or 22. Like, you know, I've been out of the house long enough. It's time for me. I can buy some open-toed shoes. You know, forget the old man. I'll do what I want to, you know. And I wore them back to visit my mom and dad. And I remember pulling in the driveway. Oh, man, I wonder if he's going to say anything to me about my feet or not, you know. I'm there for about 3 minutes. And he's like, son, what in the world do you have on your feet? I mean, just like that. He just can't understand why he wouldn't take care of your feet. Why? In the military, they tell him, if your feet get in bad situation, we got to put a guy on your right and a guy on your left and carry you out. And we just cut ourselves down to 33% opportunity of what we had because you chose not to take care of your feet. That's on you. That's on the soldier to take care of his feet. When we go look at the armor of God and we look at these ideas of what can I do to be effective, you're going to have to put these things on. And when somebody leaves them off and they get stung by a bee, even though in that situation it's okay for no compassion, I had rules or whatever, I didn't follow them. But what they need is I need you to know it's all right. Let's get your bandage up. Let's put that stuff back on. What in the world can I do to help you? What can I do now to strengthen your situation, to build a relationship better with God than to give you reason to hate God's people because we can't be merciful and forgiving? And to Kenny's point, if you are the church now, which I concur completely with that point, then you have just as much responsibility to execute and show forgiveness. Maybe you can teach another generation ahead of you something else. You don't have to go, well, you know, my mom and dad think that person's a horrible person because of what they did. You might could speak up in the car and say, well, listen, God's forgiven them. You know, I think that's what I heard. You know, God's, maybe we ought to try to do the same thing. And you might get some pushback or whatever, not telling you to be disrespectful to your parents, right? So, but just the idea of you don't have to wait. I mean, Daniel, they assume, was what? Anywhere from 15 to kind of 19, if they kind of do some math and trying to guesstimate where he was. He stands up to the king and says, I don't need your stuff, man. I'll bow down and do what I need to do, but I won't bow down to your idols and face the way. You know, there's some things we're not going to do. And we understand it to be pretty young. You don't have to wait to step up and do good and offer forgiveness to your fellow brothers and sisters in Christ. You can do it right now. You can do it right now. And you've got to find some people who are willing to do that. We have so many people that I run into. They're just scared to death to be transparent. I know Satan's whooping their tail. I don't have to ask. I can see it. Like Kenny said, you can see it on campus or those kids when they're like, man, that dude is beat up. I don't have to ask. He said he didn't sleep at all last night. I don't have to go over there and ask, are you good today? I know you're not good. I know what's going on. People of age, they've been where you are. They've lived life in similar fashions. They didn't live it utopia. They did not only look like Jesus every day of their life. They were trying. But it's okay when you fall down in the Lord because he wants to pick you up. He's dying to pick you up. We, as humans, we can't wait to step on you. and kind of leave you down there. One time I'd gotten tackled in football practice, and I was already on the ground. I was laying down, and Mike True, my buddy, comes running across and getting his feet and kicks right across my hand, rips the skin off. I'm like, dude, I'm already down here. You don't need to kick my hand in practice. I was already laying on the ground. They got me. They tackled me. It's good. You know, what I didn't need is for you to come along and scuff the skin off my hand now as I'm laying here already tackled off to the side of the football field. You know, that play ended. I don't need the additional salt in the wound. People don't need salt in the wound. They need to see something that looks like the Jesus that they're being taught about. They're told that Jesus forgives. And they're told that he forgets. And why in the world would you continue? And I'm just as guilty. My mom, one time, my older brother John was building a dam out behind our house. And so he went and told my mother that I was cursing because I was describing what he was building. And he twisted the story around or whatever. My mom didn't believe my story. This was in the 80s when women wore these little bitty skinny metal braided belts about that wide. You know anything about surface area and diameter? You know, small skinny things go deep into your flesh, you know. And she gave me a beating for that situation, of which I was not guilty. I'm 42. You know what I do every now and then when I'm home with my mom? Hey, Mom, you remember that one time you spanked me when I wasn't guilty? You know, I'm still, and she's like, Scott, I know. And every time you tell me, my heart aches. I'm like, my bad. You know, it's kind of a humorous thing now, but still the reality is, what am I doing? Let me go back and tell you where you failed, Mom. You did all the great things in my life. You've shown me the Lord. You've been a servant in our home. You've loved me without fail. But let me find the one thing I can find, and just every time I can get, let me go push it again, twist it. You know, why? We don't need that. That's not what the Lord's doing. The Lord says he's using the blood of Jesus. The understanding that I read in some of those passages about Christ's blood is that he is constantly cleansing us. The blood of Jesus is constantly cleansing. Sounds like it's more of a scrubbing mechanism. It's active. It's real. It's repetitive. You can go back to him again. And even when he's speaking, you hear 70 times what? The Lord says, forgive him. How many times? 70 times seven. We're talking same infraction. Humans, we're good for about two. And they're like, forget it, you know? It's the third time, we're done. We're not friends anymore. Really? I've been reading about Jesus and teaching about 490 times as just an illustration. And I failed three times, and now my Christian brothers and sisters have kicked me to the curb. So I challenge you, as you move forward into your life, you don't have to have the same strike hands, hug your brother, kiss him on the lips, right? Last night, my two boys were going round and round about pillows or arguing about something, and they got step number one, and then they had the same problem again. They got step number two with an added twist. I counted down from 30 to zero while they hugged. So little Corbin, he's about this tall. Big Kobe, they're sitting there just holding each other. I'm 30, 29, 28, 27, 26, you know. Can you guys change your attitudes towards each other? Why didn't you do it then? Okay, you know, I didn't have to go in for step number three. I think 30 seconds of brother hug was enough, you know, whatever. I need people who are going to pick me up when I fail. I have failed in many ways trying to do the Lord's will. And sometimes I get mad at me, and then sometimes I go, wait a second, you know, so I need to get mad at Satan. And sometimes we try to over push that. Well, Satan. Sometimes it's you, okay? Sometimes it's you, Scott. I understand Satan's out there. I understand Satan may have got you. But some point in time, we have to say, don't you know about him? You know about him, right? I mean, there's a point where we got to be careful that we don't over talk about the enemy, when we know he's there. He exists. He's real. I failed my effort on the enemy. You know, I failed. The movie, We Are Marshall, you know, the plane that crashed and killed the whole team. They made the movie about that. The one guy that lived, the African-American player that survived because he wasn't on the plane. He was late that morning. I don't know if you remember that or not. And he's standing up on that porch one night, and he's looking out over the campus or whatever, and his buddy's like, hey, man, you good? He's like, no, I'm not good. Well, you're here, man. We're glad you're here. And he's hitting the handrail. I mean, he's going irate. And he's like, I should not be here. I failed to be where I was supposed to be on time. I should have went down with my team. You know, it's not that he wishes himself dead, but he understands I missed a responsibility. I should have been there. I should have went down with them because I goofed around and I was late to where I needed to be. Sometimes we have to understand we've missed the responsibility. We've missed it. You know, remember the Titans, right? Lastic, the big white guy. He audibles, Omaha, Omaha. The other kid with the bad attitude towards the team steps out of the way and lets the linebacker through and smashes and injures the tailback or the quarterback, whoever it was. I think it was Petey. He failed his responsibility. He got somebody else injured. He made a decision. And, of course, I love that situation. You know what the captain of the team said? Coach, I want him off the team. Coach says, you know my policy. Nobody gets off the team once they're on the team. But if you want him off the team, you go kick him off the team. And the guy went to him and said, listen, if you're not going to try to fulfill your responsibilities here, we want you off the team. Luckily, God's not like that entirely, but in some ways there is some similarities that if you're not going to do it, God says, I'll cut you off. We'll take those branches and we'll burn them. We can't be like that. We don't want to be like that. We don't want to be in that pile, if you will. I want to be somebody that people say, man, that guy. And I've had someone say, kind of in a frustration situation about forgiving, and they said of me to someone else, well, yeah, well, he'll forgive anybody. Like, yeah, I will. And I'm not ashamed that you said that. I'll forgive anybody. You know why I'll forgive anybody? Because, man, I need it too. And so to me, in the passage I had here, I wanted us to read, I think I can just reference for you to get the point. If you do not forgive others, God will not forgive you. I want every bit of God's mercy when I get up there before him. I want every bit of it. I'll take every bit of it I can get. And so I'm going to give all I can down here because I want other people to get there and have that opportunity to stand before God and have a walk with him because somebody picked them up. I had a buddy of mine that came to our church and he was there for a long time. He had come back to the Lord. He'd left the Lord. And I never knew him before this, but he had started his walk with the Lord again. Man, I just took him as he was one of us, you know. And about 6 years later, they left us and he came to me. And he said, hey, man, we just don't feel like we're really being embraced here, blah, blah, blah. He said, I want to tell you something. He said, you're the only guy in this whole place that has treated me like a class one member of the Lord's body since I came. And he said, I want to thank you for that. I didn't know I was doing that. I just thought that's what we were all supposed to do. But he felt like others felt, he said, I could sense it. They knew what I came forward from. I told them my past. It was pretty nasty. He said, I knew they just put me in this box of, well, Jeff's an okay guy, but we're going to put him in the basement. You know, he's had some problems or whatever. That's not what the Lord does. The Lord does not want us to be second rate because of sin. He wants to use you and turn you to do good in his favor. Okay? God has need of you as you've been challenged. Now, I want you to go think about the others who have need of you. Maybe 9 out of 10 other people have failed them and have destroyed their confidence in God's plan of salvation. Salvation, that's a saving word. They need somebody to go to them and say, look, I'm with you. Let's go. You know, let's get up and go. We got this. I'll lead you. Jimmy Shaw was a buddy of ours that was a friend of my dad's. He was blind in Louisville, Kentucky. And every time we'd see Jimmy, he wanted to feel you. He couldn't see you. Man, and Dad said, just stand there and be still. You know, he'd be poking in the eye, be water, and he'd stick his finger in your nose. You're like, oh, man, you know, man, Scott, you're getting big. You know, that's how he could see you. He wanted to get fit. My dad said, Jimmy, we can go race. I can't run. He said, yeah, we can. You hold onto my arm and I'll run and you follow. And I'll, you know, there's ways you can even lead the blind, someone who can't see, to their path of fitness in life. If you just be willing to go pick them up, you hold on to me and I'll tell you what's coming. And my dad would just tell him, curb ahead, 4-inch curb, stairs going down. We're going to up. He just would communicate to Jimmy. Jimmy could get out and do some good even in a blind situation. People in life need that. If they're broken, if they're down, if they're devalued, they need you to pick them up. And I'll leave you with a concept. I want you to understand it's okay to strike hands for the well-being of others and just reset your attitude and understand God's rooting for them. Why don't you root for them as well? That's what a friend needs, all right? Thank you for your time. Appreciate your effort. In life, serving God, continue to do so.